call the order, for 9:02 a.m. And again, for those who have not been on the call since we've been doing COVID case, I would like to review the logistics of the meeting today. I've already violated the first rule, which is to state your name and your position each time you speak. Defying Fidel precedent, we are complying with
Your video's back, but you're choppy, and we can't hear you.
I'm right next to my router because I moved in order to try to
need to change your internet provider.
Okay. Going forward again, by Fidel President, 5 provisions to the executive order. 1, that the public has to listen to the meeting in real time. 2, that the meeting will be recorded and transcribed and available on the website within 7 days. 3, that it had to be posted on the website. 4, that any materials relevant to the meeting be on the website. And that 5, that all speakers state their name and title as applicable every time they speak. So I would at this time ask that to limit background noise, to raise your hand to signal somehow to the desire to
I can't understand anything you're saying.
It's hard to understand.
Maybe you should try yours without doing that.
This is going to be a problem, and what I'll think
about. Yeah. Well,
can't hit you.
Maybe
I'm looking for a solution. I don't know what to do with it.
Well, maybe Cindy can run the meeting. Can Cindy run the meeting as vice president? We can't hear you, Cindy. You're muted.
You want me to give it a shot, Brian? Let me turn my video. How about if you use your phone?
You could just do the sound.
How is it with just the sound and no video?
Yep.
Better.
We can hear you. We can do that right now.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's try that then. I would now call on our Secretary, Kathy Sabo, to take the roll call, please.
Yep, Kathy Sabo speaking. Doing the roll call. Cindy Biancamano?
Here.
Jeff Conway?
Here.
Jan DeFratti? Absent. Hema De Silva? Hema De Silva?
Yep.
Jason Griffin?
Here.
Gary Peterson?
Here.
Kathy Sabo is here. Bonnie Fidel.
Here.
Bill Taylor.
Here.
And we also have here Jeff Stone from Cold Spring Farm. Is that correct?
Yes, here.
And we have Ryan Kelly from Bouvier Insurance. Is that correct? Is that correct, Ryan? Yes.
Jeff, you might be on the line or something, but the interference from the wind or something is really bad. I don't know if you can. Are you outside or are you inside?
I was inside, and
okay in here, you tell me.
Yes, yeah, better than that.
Okay, I'm harvesting arugula now. That's my goal.
Okay, Lee Griffin is here.
All right, if it's a problem, just tell me and I'll move.
Lee Griffin, tax, what are you? Treasurer.
Treasurer,
Ed Bader, tax collector.
Here. Yep.
And that's everyone who is, on.
Bonnie Sedell, president, the next order is this public comment.
So, Jeff Stone, that's why you're here, is public comment, right?
That's correct.
So, you can talk now.
Okay,
you have the floor now.
Okay. So, everyone can hear me, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you can.
Okay, great. Okay, so I'm in a greenhouse right now. all right, so I'm checking in with all of you because it came to my attention by Ed Bader via phone call last fall, I believe it was, and it's been a very crazy winter, as all of you know. We're living in a time of unknown, and it's more important now than ever before that our farm sign, which I was pointed out was a problem down at the end of the hill, and that should be removed, you know, we need to understand that that sign, there has been a sign there for way longer than my lifetime and even before in some form or another. And I can't speak for all the signs in the past, but I can speak for our sign that is there now and has been for a long time, that it is not a yard sign. And it has been there at the bottom of the hill so that people, including the Lake Hayward Association folks, and locate our farm, which is a trick and a half to find if you don't know your way around, which is most people in the community, because we're out of the way, but yet we're close to everything. We're on top of a very large hill, and we own most of the road, and we get the great fortune of being on the border of East Haddon and Colchester. So we have four addresses, all of which are super confusing, and none of them really get you here, just to be honest. So we've in the past had like a yard sign down on the cemetery end, which is totally not part of Lake Hayward anyway. But the sign that goes at the foot of the hill, let me know if any of you don't know where that is. It's at the pavilion location at the entrance of Lake Hayward Town Road, used to be known as Town Road. And it directs you up the hill with an arrow to get to the farm. Where we have a farm stand that's very active, especially in the summertime because of the Lake Hayward community. And my observation over the last several years has been that there are a lot of changes in the community down there, and there are a lot of new people coming to the area who don't know we exist. But the farm stand is really like as close to a local grocery store, convenience store you're going to get, really at the top of a hill. And so the sign is there. It's substantial in the sense that it's made of metal. We had someone newly painted a few years ago. But it caves with all the wind and all the crazy weather. It seems to stay put, which is the goal, not to have a junky yard sign or something that could blow away or look hideous. The only time we put anything else is if there's like a special event and we just want people to know what's happening. But we usually do that at the top of the hill. And so, you know, it was brought to my attention that having our sign down there is an issue and it doesn't meet the standards of the Lake Hayward Association. And that's really the first time we've heard of it in the, I don't know, 16 years we've been here. So we were renting, but just in case none of you know, we actually own the farm, and we will be here until we die. Hopefully someone cool will take over someday. But in the meantime, we need people to be able to find the farm, and we think we provide a good service to the Hayward community as well. And we're asking your permission to leave the sign. And I would love to improve the area there if possible as well, with like a little garden. But I'm open to any of your thoughts on how to appropriately do that or to meet more of the standards you're looking for. Maybe you're looking for like a little more historic sign or something more wood. And whatever that takes, I'm willing to do to accommodate that need and also provide the service that we've been providing for a long time.
Thanks, Jessica. Great information. For the public comment section, we generally don't like have an open discussion with the person, but the signage is on our agenda today under old business, so we'll talk about that later, what you just presented. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So I just wanted to let you know that we're not going to talk about it right now as a board.
That's totally fine. So when will I hear back?
I don't know.
This is Jeffrey. Jeffrey Wang in Wood. If it gets decided today, I volunteered to the board. If the issue gets decided today, I'd be happy to go inform Pisco later today. That'd be fine. Because I actually have to go to the farm later on anyway. And what I also want to say is what I like about the farm, I know that the issue has been about the sign, but I fully support this farm that's been here like 75 years and the store's been here for so long. I just don't think that the type of signage that we're trying to contrast that to is the signs hey, hire me for lawn gardening or hire me to get some, snow plow or something. That's not what it is. I just think that, if we really need to have the sign to be different and better, to be in line with what our Woodlake favorite sign is, I think that's appropriate. I also find it, nice that she would, offer you deep paying for that. And also offer you make the best area look a bit better with the garden or something else. I don't find it objectionable, but I find it being, grandfathered in, and I think it certainly should stay there. And I just want to put my voice out there because I feel very strongly about it.
Okay. Well, I have to go, President. Thank you very much, Justin. We'll take this comment into consideration.
Okay, and do you have any sense of when I might hear back on what needs to be done before the growing season gets going, in terms of the sign or the location, or if it doesn't get discussed at this meeting, does that mean it's tabled for another month?
President, signage is on the agenda for today.
Okay, so I should hear back soon then. Okay, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye.
Stay well. Bonnie President, at this time I would entertain a motion to suspend the order of business or to allow for the insurance to be presented to Brian Kelly.
Susan Griffin, board member, I second that motion.
I really can't make a motion.
Susan Griffin, board member, I make a motion that was suspend the normal agenda so Brian Kelly from Bouvier Insurance can speak first.
I second.
Okay, Kathy Sabo will do the vote. Cindy Biancamano?
Yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Dan DeCratis, absent. Hima De Silva?
Yes.
Jason Griffin?
Yes. Yes.
Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Sabo votes yes. Bonnie Sedell?
Yes.
Bill Taylor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
President Brian, you have the floor. Brian? Brian, you're muted.
You're muted.
Can't hear you, Brian.
Brian, you're muted.
Where did you before, Brian? Brian, you still can't hear me.
No.
You may have to go on telephone.
That'd be fine.
Thank you.
Is Brian speaking?
No, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All right. I've got you on my computer and my phone. It's terrible. We had all talked about the ongoing situation regarding the insurance company and their perspective on holding swimming lessons, okay? So I basically went back and forth with Philadelphia Insurance more times than I'd like to, care to admit, but eventually they were able to, with stipulations, take the exclusion off the policy, okay? And the stipulations are pretty much similar to bringing a landscaper on the premise, okay? They want to see a $1 million policy. They want Lake Hayward named as an additional insured. They'd like to see a hold harmless agreement between the swimming instructor and, and Lake Hayward. Because essentially, what the insurance company is trying to do is not be held responsible for the actions or inactions of the swimming instruction. Okay? So basically, the exclusion will be removed with stipulations. So if the swimming instructor wants to, or if you, choose to have a swimming instructor, Philadelphia Insurance is willing to accept the risk.
Again? So what again are the stipulations, Fred? $1 million to policy a hold?
A hold harmless agreement between the swimming instructor and Lake Hayward, and on the policy, the insurance company wants Lake Hayward to be named as an additional insured on the swimming instructor's policy.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is Cindy Biancomato, Vice President. Does it add to our cost at all, Brian?
It does not add a single penny to your cost.
Thank you.
It's a station giving, and a swim instructor needs to have a $1 million liability policy?
Correct.
And that's a $1 million open water policy. It's got to be an open water policy.
From what I understand, they are... the individual instructors are able to purchase these policies on the open market because there are special programs. I've never written one, so. But there are specialists that deal with, swim instructors.
Brian, the other requirement I think you mentioned that they wanted was that she's got to comply with Red Cross. American Red Cross swimming instructor guidelines.
Correct. And what that had to do with was just the ratio of instruction to students. We don't want 25 5-year-olds out there learning to swim with one person supervising.
That's not
going to
happen.
Exactly. It's just the way they protect them. That's all.
Right. And then the other thing that we're suggesting is the parents. We're not sure whether or not the parents provide the instructor with a whole harmless agreement. But it would seem to me that they should, she should get a, and we should get a whole harmless from the parents that the swim instructor is at their risk and no liability. No criminal liability to the association.
Brian, so is there any requirement that the students be
association members versus just if this instructor gets people from around the state that want to take lessons from
there? There's not. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm not trying to stop you guys from doing anything that you like to do. I just want to make sure that we have the proper insurance in place, you know, so that we're not left uncovered for life. That's all.
Gary Peterson, board member. It seems like $1 million, and now it's almost up to 8 grounds. So you're saying that $1 million, if somebody drowns, a kid drowns, they can go after the swim instructor for $1 million, up to $1 million. There's no way they can come after the board or the association?
They can absolutely come after the board or the association, which is why you have, you know, you'll have $1 million primary coverage, and then you'll have the you know, I believe it's a $5 million umbrella at this point. What Ed and I talked about was maybe raising your umbrella level, because if there's, you know, if there's a loss related to swimming instruction, it's not going to be a frequency issue, it's going to be a severity issue. You know, it's so, you know, I guess to answer your question, yes, for policy response for $1 million, then your primary policy with Philadelphia response for $1 million, then you have a $5 million to Greenwich Insurance. You know, that'll respond.
Brian, this correction is $10 million umbrella, right? $10 million,
okay. Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you for answering.
Cool.
Honest to God, President, are there any other questions for Brian Kelly? If there are no other questions for Brian, thank you very much for pursuing this work.
Are you quiet?
Honestly, Bill President, as we are talking about the swim update, would you like to continue the conversation?
Yeah. Kathy Stable, yeah, I wanted to know what Cindy found in her research.
Sure, Cindy Biancomano, Vice President. So I'm really, really happy to hear Brian, because I worked pretty hard and lots of questions, as did Ed, with a gentleman that I found who was pretty sure that he could help us, and as it turns out, he could not help us. In fact, our $28,000 insurance would be over $100,000. So I'm really happy that Brian was able to come up with something.
Honestly, President, thank you very much to me. I know that you worked hard on this, and I know that Ed Bader in touch with the insurance agent too to try to so that he would understand what was going on and. I also want to say that I was bugging Ed Bader on a regular basis with that fucking Brian Kelly, who did not want to take this on, but or who persisted with contacting Philadelphia, and perhaps Ed can you know, elaborate a little bit more on this. But as far as I understood from what Ed said, that Brian Kelly eventually said that because UVA insurance fights so much with Philadelphia, that they were willing to drop it with the stipulations. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ed. And I need to remind you to say who you are.
Yes, Ed Bader, insurance coordinator. If I had a very long discussion with Pat Walsh, who was Cindy's contact at insurance at the firm in Weathersfield. And we spent actually more than an hour discussing all of the aspects of our insurance program. he felt at some point that he could get a what is referred to as a non-admitted carrier to write it, but that when you use non-admitted carriers, our umbrella carrier probably would not respond well to a non-admitted means you're not licensed in any particular state. He also was very, once I explained the risk, he was, I think he understood that the substantial amount of risk that's involved. I mean, there's never a problem until you have a claim. And that's when the issues arise, if and when we had a claim. So, and Brian, I think, with Philadelphia to come up with the standards. And, the board obviously has to weigh the risk involved as to whether or not you want to basically start the process of going through a discussion, a negotiation with the school inspector as to whether or not she is willing to meet the criteria that our underwriters Philadelphia want. And then, of course, the other issue, of course, which is on top of this, is whether she's giving swimming lessons during this time of pandemic, COVID-19, in open water. So that's obviously another issue that we need to take into consideration. But it's really up to the board as to whether or not you want to move ahead. I would say that based on the fact that the carrier is willing to remove the exclusion, that we should, my recommendation would be we can start the negotiation process, but I just want to make sure the board understands the significant risk, as Brian has pointed out. If there is a claim for my swim instruction program, those claims are not insignificant. Those claims are very large and substantial. And if we did have a claim, obviously, while our carriers would stand and meet our coverage limitations, they also expect to get that money back through future ratings. So, there's a substantial amount of risk that's involved here, and the board needs to weigh that carefully. That's all.
I should tell President, is there additional discussion on this?
This is Jason Griffin, board member. And would you recommend if we do move ahead to go with swim lessons that we raise our umbrella limit?
It would depend upon what the rate is. Right now, the rate for our $10 million umbrella has remained relatively constant. It's a little less than $3,000 a year. I assume that if we raise it to $15 million or $20 million, the premium would increase.
It might be interesting to find out by how much. This is Jason.
And this is Ed. Brian can give Brian ask him to provide us with a quote if we were to go to increments of adding $5 or $10 million.
This is Jason, that sounds good.
Board member, just a comment. I understand that the governor's orders to open the Connecticut beaches has been now declared as of the 20th. I don't know if the town has taken appropriate action to either join in with that request from the governor or not. And so that's one thing that we need to look at in view of what we had initially provided at the emergency meeting. The second comment I wanted to make was that there's no CDC evidence. CDC's guidelines have shown no evidence that swimming in salt water or fresh water has contributed to the spread of COVID-19 as of this point.
Kathy Sable, board member. I think that we should move ahead with getting the quotes for the extra umbrella policy, and I don't think that we should worry about putting Zoom lessons in place for this year, but we can let the association know that we are going to put them in place for next year.
So this is Ed. You took the words out of my mouth. I think that given where we are, that it would have been my suggestion to the board, depending on which way you wanted to go, that we would raise this topic with the board, with the association members at the association meeting, and you can obviously get their feedback. But that any discussion about some lessons, I think, would probably have to be put off until next summer, is what I would suggest. I don't think we can get through all of the discussion, negotiations, whatever, within in time to put some lessons in place this year.
This is Gary Peterson, board member. I agree with all that. I think I'm in favor of the swim lessons for next year. I mean, yes, it does carry some risk. I think we should raise our umbrella policy. But we have risk all the time. We have risk with the children's playground. He could fall off there, break his neck, be paralyzed for the rest of his life. But there's a very outside chance of that. It's like the drowning swim lesson. So I'm in favor of it. Thank you.
This is Bill Taylor. I'd like to make a comment. I'd like the instructor to follow the American Red Cross guidelines. I'd like to raise the umbrella. It was $20 million. No cost to the association for the swim lessons. No outside swimmers from other towns, at least to start, POLH only. Families to pay the full cost of the instructions because we always have had to, even in years past. Hold the until next year for the instructions. Thank you.
I said, Bill, did you want to put that in the form of a what you said there? Is that your intention?
In the form of a what?
But was it your intention that be the motion to put before the board?
No, that was just my summary of my thoughts. That's all. That's what I'm looking for in this whole thing.
Ed Baker, if I could just say one thing about the instruction. Based on what we know, the majority of the children that were instructed basically came from extended families of people who owned, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, children came from people who owned properties. But the advertising for swim lessons at Lake Hayward was placed on Facebook. And so therefore, I believe that while it was not a significant amount of children, there were children from the other side of the lake, from people who knew people. So there were people. So the only thing that I would suggest is that as a part of your serious then, that would be one of the things we would have to discuss with the instructor, because if you put a definitive requirement that they only be related to the property owner in Lake Hayward, that might provide an impediment for her to get enough to form a class. I'm not sure. I don't have the evidence, but I think the way in which the simulation program was advertised, principally through word of mouth, Facebook, and the Facebook listings are all public information, so you can see that. So she would get it, get other people. So at this point, I would try not to put put anything into a motion at this point until we get a little further along, and then we can flesh it all out in terms of what our membership believes is appropriate. I mean, may stand at Bill's position and would be the position of the board and the position of the members that we should be only providing the services to children of property owners or grandchildren or related.
Well, yes, there should be some restrictions, Ed.
And I'm sure, and the only thing I'm saying is if we start negotiations with the student instructor and we raise that as an issue, we need to be clear with her that the only people that children that she can accept are children that are related in some form or manner to property owners of the association.
Yes, or extend it to the other side of the lake like we've done before. But, I just don't want to see people from out of town using it, and then they learn to come to Lake Hayward as a beach, and they don't know otherwise because they learn to swim here.
Bonnie Fidel, President, would it be appropriate for me to reach out to Meredith at this time to see if he is able to obtain the open water policy, and if she is willing to abide by the other of our insurance brokers' requests?
Cindy Giacomo, I think that's where we should start, yes, because it's a moot point if we don't have an instructor anyway, so.
Well, Taylor, I think we should all send you our suggestions, too, so you have a starting point from all of us.
I need to tell President, anyone that wishes to send me an email with a, in addition to that which Brian Kelly stated earlier. Is there any further discussion on swimming? If not, I should go back to the regular order of business and the minutes of the 8th board meeting. Again, thank you very much, Kathy. I see that you were up until the wee hours of the morning transcribing these, and I would like to make a motion that we accept the. Has everyone had a chance to read the minutes? Can everybody do not? Or
yeah. I had one correction by the individual board
member. Hannah first. Bonnie Fidel, I'd like a motion. I'd like to entertain a motion to accept the minutes, a second, and then we can do. I'd like a motion to accept the minutes of the 8th board meeting.
This is Jason Griffin. I make a motion to accept the minutes of the April 15th board meeting.
Second.
Jerry Pearson, board member. I'll second it.
Bonnie Fidel, President, it's open for discussion. Emma, that would be you.
No, I have on the next meeting is regarding the presenting that I have documented. So I have nothing last particular meeting. Thank you.
Okay, Bonnie Fidel, President, have a motion on the floor to accept the April 15th. First, Governor, if a second. Kathy Sabo, if you would take a vote on acceptance.
Kathy Sabo, taking the vote on acceptance.
And you're muted, Kathy.
Oh, sorry.
Kathy, you're muted.
Yep. Sorry about that. Kathy Sabo, taking the vote. Cindy Biancomano?
Cindy Biancomano, yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Jan DePratty, absent. Hima De Silva?
Yes.
Jason Griffin?
Yes.
Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Sabo, yes. Bonnie Fidel?
Yes.
Bill Taylor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Wish you heard this. This is Jason Griffin. I make a motion to accept the minutes of the April 18th board meeting.
I just did that.
We did the 15th.
We did the 15th. There's two.
Oh.
Yes, second. Cindy Biancamano.
Thanks, Mr. President. It's open for discussion.
So, board member, I just want to make one little correction, and that was the statement in the minutes which said that I have a document that the town says that the property is owned by POALS. I don't have any documents as such. What I have is an email which says that it is not their road, and that it's part of the association. So I don't have any documents per se.
This is Jason. Do you need as amended?
I was proposed that Bonnie should go present, and I was proposed if Kathy was will accept the amendment made by some of that we vote to accept. The minutes of the April 18th, 2020 meeting as amended by Hema de Sola.
Sure, Kathy Sabo, yep. I'll change it.
Time to vote.
Okay. Voting. Kathy Sabo. Cindy Biancamano.
Cindy Biancamano, yes.
Jeff Conway.
Yes.
Jan DePratty's absent. Hema de Sola.
Yes.
Jason Griffin.
Yes.
Gary Peterson.
Yes.
Kathy Sabo votes yes. Bonnie Sedell.
Bonnie Sedell, yes.
Bill Taylor.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to the next item of business, the President's Report. Over the past month, I received several requests for replacement parking permits from new residents, which are being taken care of. I received mail from Pelton regarding two rafts that floated over to the other side of the lake. Happy to report that after posting them on Facebook, they were reunited with their owners. I received two emails from Neil Murphy, which I did forward to the board. One asking for the Board of Governors' stance on the rental of Airbnb units, and another one asking what we were doing about Airbnb units. Email from Mike Trophy questioning the board's lack of knowledge of swim lessons being conducted. That was addressed, unfortunately, at the February 2020 board meeting, which did not have a quorum. We had no contact with by Meredith Young at the time, but Meredith Crocodello now, for support of governors since 2015. Here, of course. And I also received a letter from Matthew Conway regarding the change to the property owner's form on our web, which I also forwarded to the board. And that is the end of my report. I'm ready for financial reports now.
All right, Lee Griffin, Treasurer. I forwarded the board my Treasurer's report since our last meeting. Did everyone receive it?
Yes.
I provided you with the budget to actual and the current account balances and also the April cash flow and balance report. Is there any questions on my report? You can also note that the dredging project has been completed. We budgeted $41,000. Came in at $38,976.28. The project did come under budget of $2,096.72, as noted in my report. The bank statements have been reconciled. All invoices to this date has been paid. As always, if there's any questions, you can certainly contact me, and I'll be happy to assist. Yes, Mr.
Beasley. Tax collector, and since we have finished the Third Beach dredging project and the purchase of the Hayfield property, I think it would be appropriate to return those hundreds that amount to the capital reserve account.
Will we be including the additional berm we wish to conduct at the Third Beach as part of, or use those funds as part of that, or return
well, that
to?
That wasn't part of the dredging project. We can wait another month. Maybe Gary can tell us how much that will be.
The berm is going to be, of course, just about $500.
So would we find it appropriate to take those funds that are available out of the dredging and just note it as such?
And Peter, I think that the berm is really not have anything to do with the dredging project. So, to the extent possible, I think it would be better served to take it out of the operating budget for the current year. Now, if we get close to the end of the year and we find that Gary's going to spend his money on the budget, then we can make another decision. But at some point, when we finally close the year out, we should reversely put those under expended funds back in the general capital reserve.
Okay. I can provide the board with a report on both with the remaining funds, and for your approval, we will return the unspent funds back to the capital.
I would entertain, always to go present, I would entertain a motion at this time to do so.
David Griffin, I make a motion to return the unspent funds from this Hayfield Road property and Third Beach dredging into the reserves, capital reserves.
I'll second that. Mr. Bell, President, is there any further discussion on that? That said, Kathy, could you take a vote on that, please?
Yep, Kathy Sabo taking the vote on capital reserve motion. Cindy Biancamano?
Yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Sandra Pratty's absent. Hema De Silva?
Yes.
Jason Griffin?
Yes.
Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Sabo votes yes. Bonnie Fidel?
Bonnie Fidel, yes.
Bill Taylor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
President, thank you. Can we have a touch report, please?
Yes, Ed Bader, tax collector. The tax collections to date are over 99.5%, but there's only one delinquent property tax account unpaid. That account is in the process of being collected. As we said last month, it is subject to the tax sale procedure under a recent governor's executive order. All tax sales have been suspended until July 1st. If that suspension in the executive order is lifted at that time, the process of collection through a tax sale process will continue. Under another executive order, and I talked about this last month, but I didn't really have a lot of detail because the governor's office and the Office of Policy and Management were still working on how this would be applied to municipalities. So under this second executive order, the governor has ordered all municipalities to extend the grace period for all taxes due between now and July 1st, 2020, from 90 days. The executive order originally did not apply to tax districts, which we are, one. But then subsequent, when they all started raising questions, they went back and clarified it in another executive order that the tax districts would follow the policy of the town in which they are located. So the policy in the original executive order is a policy that would be adopted by the town of East Adam, and then we are, as a tax district, bound to follow that same policy. The town of East Adam voted on, I believe it was April 26th, to adopt one of the provisions of the executive order. They had a choice. They could adopt one, two, or none. They adopted the first one, which is to extend the grace period from 30 to 90 days with certain exceptions. The extension of the grace period does not apply to property owners who escrow their taxes. That doesn't really apply to us as a tax district because no bank, mortgage company, or other lender escrows association taxes. But if you escrow your taxes for the town of East Adam, you will not get the additional 60-day grace period. Okay, the other exception which would apply in a greater deal of amount to us in the Lake Taylor district is that landlords not get this exception automatically. So if you rent a house on either a year-long, monthly, weekly basis, well, you are a landlord and you do not get the additional 60-day grace period unless you certify that you meet one of two conditions. And that's where it starts to get hairy. And in order, you have to fill out a form. And you have to submit that form to the tax collector before July 1st in order to get an exception and have you apply to the for the 60-day additional grace period. Now, I can tell you generally that those exceptions relate to a forbearance, which means you allow your renters an additional grace period of 60 days to pay their rent, or you're in a material financial difficulty because they're not paying their rents, and you need time to pay those, pay your taxes. So, the devil is in the detail because there are still a number of details that need to be worked out before we can roll this out to the association, especially because, you know, there are dozens of people that rent their cottages or their second, third, or fourth cottage in the association out during the summer months. So we're working on that. Denise Dill and I are working on it together with the Office of Policy and Management to understand completely how this will be applied to landlords. And so once we get that information, we will provide it to everybody because we don't necessarily know all of the people that a property owners that are renting their cottages or homes. Okay? So that completes my tax collector report. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Kathy Sabo, board member. Just there was a little confusion. You said that there were two provisions, and the first provision, the town of East Haddam accepted, which was the 90-day grace period. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the second exception, what was the one about the rental properties and the landlords? So the town of East Haddam accepted that, or was that part of the first provision? I was confused.
So, yeah, it was part of the first. The original provision that was put out by OPM and the governor was you could have two things. You could have a grace period of an additional 60 days. During that 90-day period, you would have a reduced interest rate on delinquencies if you didn't pay your taxes. The town of East Haddam chose not to adopt that second lower interest rate. So we are stuck with that.
Okay.
Now what the town of East Haddam did, originally the governor's order required all property owners to apply. Imagine this, all property owners to apply for the 60-day additional grace period. A lot of pushback from tax collectors, us included, that why would you want hundreds of thousands of people submitting for it. So they expanded it to allow the town to waive the requirement of filing an application for people who do not rent their properties. But if you are a landlord and rent your properties, right, you must file an application to get the additional 60-day grace period, and you must meet one or both of the conditions that are set out in the application form. Now, we're trying to get a little bit more clarity because it's a two-page form and it's very confusing for people to understand. We're trying to get some clarity on it. Maybe we can revise the form or at least provide enough information to help people fill it out properly. And that form would then be submitted to the town, and then the town would consider whether they accept it or not. But if you don't file the form as a landlord, you don't get the additional 60-day forbearance. If you say, nobody knows that I rent my property, you take a risk that ultimately, if we determine, and the town's coming up with lists of people that rent, and you don't file a form, don't meet the requirements, and take the additional 60 days, and that would mean the town and the association would come back after you for the delinquent interest on the additional grace period. But we're trying to work all of that out. It is complex. It is confusing. And some people might just say, well, it's not worth the headache. I'll just pay the tax within the 30-day period and be done with it. So, but that's a decision that property owners who rent property will have to make. But we will try to give you some more guidance on that as soon as we can get it pulled together, confirmed, and ratified by OPM.
Myself, President, are there any other questions or clarifications that you'd like from our tax collector?
Chairman, for the board member, and just one good question. This is only related to delinquencies that you are still trying to correct, the one person that is still delinquent. Are you talking about the taxes for this year that were due on the 31st of July?
There was another provision for current delinquency, and that would be our one account there was in the process of selection. There was a special provision for them that if they made payments between April, May, and June, instead of charging them 1.5% per month, the executive order reduced it to 1/4 of 1%. The people who are doing for it during that period of time had to make payments. Our delinquency did not make any payments. So that provision is moot, does not apply. Did I answer your question?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
Bonnie Sudell, President, are there any other questions? I'd like to move on to committee reports. I think we'll go back to you, Ed Bader. Watching this is first on the.
I'll try to make this quick. The budget committee was formed and appointed by Bonnie Sudell. I believe she put out an email to the board to that extent. The policy that we, or the procedure that we would use for the budget committee, the same as we did last year. For the most part, we will start with the process of asking the committee chairs and people responsible for line items, probably in the next week or so or 2 weeks, to start formulating their budget for 2021-22. Lee and I will provide them with some historical information so they know what it is, and they will compile their preliminary budgets. The budget committee will then, go-to meetings, have meetings with the budget committee, with the people responsible for line items, discuss the budgets in detail. We will then present a proposed budget of defense for the discussion at a town meeting in July. And at the same time, or right after, we will come to the board with a proposed budget. So the board then will weigh in on the budget. If, for example, the budget committee said, well, you know, this particular chair didn't spend their money in the last 2 or 3 years, so we're not giving you the same money. This year, or there's a new chair or something, the people who presented the budgets would be invited to the budget committee to do the meeting with the board and to would make their case to the board directly to increase their budget. The board then once the board weighs in on the budget, makes the adjustments that it wants, then the budget would be presented to the members at the association meeting in August. And that's a procedure that we followed for the last, I think, 2 or 3 years. It seemed to go fairly well. Everybody had a chance to weigh in on the budget. We got member feedback. We got the committees that were, if they were unhappy with their budget, got a chance to discuss them and plead their case with the board. And then the board made the final decision as to what budget should be submitted to the members. Okay, any questions?
Catherine Sable, board member. I just wanted to voice that I requested for Bonnie to be part of that committee, and I just want to make sure that you're all aware of that.
Okay. Well, I think, Ed Bader, Kathy, I think that as far as the go-to meetings, you can dial in on the budget committee meetings on it. I mean, they're open. Now with the go-to thing, we can, but we're trying to get people, for the most part, people that are not on the board and people that not really have major budgets on the committee so they can be sort of an independent view of the budget. And I think it worked pretty well. Lee, do you want to chime in? I mean, you were on the committee.
Yes, it worked well.
Okay.
Well, Kathy Sable, let me just say that as a new member of the board, I am curious and interested in learning how processes work. So I would like to be part of the committee.
Kathy, this is Jason Griffin. Kathy, I agree. It's good to see the MS go to meeting. I think in the past we had issues with the members feeling the board was pushing the budget, so the decision was made to have non-board members on the actual committee. That doesn't mean you couldn't be part of the meeting.
Well, I just want to make Kathy say, but I just want to make sure I'm part of all meetings, not just, you know, the ones that are picked and choose of what I can be part of. Does that make sense?
Yes, my name is me, the Bader, my little me.
I just want to be part of the, Kathy said, I just want to learn to be part of the process. That's a big deal.
That's good. Kathy, you're welcome to join.
Thank you.
I'm CDL President,
I think you cut off Bonnie. She was saying to go to events, Jeffrey, so you can go.
Okay. I know there wasn't talking about events that the COVID policy thing, but at least let me just give you some updates. So, we have three movie nights, which is nice. We added on another movie night from Bonnie. Instead of just having the one traditional one for the year, we now have three. That'd be good. We thought about the kitty jingle. I spoke to Colleen Sokolowski and Kid Craft. There's really no change there. But they're going to get, first going to be adding a lot more tables. And she said always it's about 20 kids. And she said generally always are like, you know, spread far apart on the ticket table. So we'll just make sure that we have more tables to continue with the social distancing. Speaking to Linda and Phil Sauber, we actually just, you know, we thought about the same thing, kids think it's just spreading that apart. And I thought last night that it may be better, and we can study kind of what you think. I think for bingos, it may be good to get disposable cards and use markers instead of using the same cards over and over, because that can be transmission of, you know, COVID perhaps. And also the table links, which I love. I'm not saying we get rid of them, but I think it should be considered that we get disposable bingo cards and the markers, which is what I'm going to look into. That way, they can be played one time and thrown away, and that way we won't collect things from a lot of families back to the people who are putting on events. So I'm going to speak to Linda and Phil about that. I think that may be a good idea that way. The adult crafts, I think, they work as well. We normally have like 15 people against those, like one person to a table. I don't see that as a problem. I do think I have to cancel the men's breakfast because I just can't see men like lifting up the mask to eat, and I think men like to eat together at a table. So I don't think that could be safe in that way. I'm also really concerned, and I haven't spoken to Bonnie about ladies' night. And Bonnie, you and I, and Bonnie and Bob, we really should have a discussion about that to think if you can have it happen. I think it perhaps can't, but I'm not closing it because it's really your event. But we need to have that conversation, you, Bob, and I, or anyone else in your committee for that matter. On the band, again, I spoke with some people in my committee. I think the bands all have, I contacted them all. We all have, like, if we have to cancel bands, we're going to have to give them a week notice. I think in doing the bands, I don't think they have to, any of them have to be canceled. And a lot of these events, which, things certainly go day by day, still are 6 to 8 weeks out. But anyway, on the bands, what we thought of doing is putting the ticket tables around the perimeter of the pavilion and have the bands area that entire dance floor, not having the dancing, just have it totally open. And speaking to the band, they thought that would be good if they don't want to be wearing masks and support their singing, so you don't want to, if anybody has any issues, not to have, again, COVID being present that way. And if anybody wants to dance, they can dance outside of the living area, which is in the grass or on the floor. And I thought that would be fine. We can certainly work about that as well. In looking at, and that's mainly all the July stuff, into the August month, you know, we have golf tournaments. There's going to be one band's going to have a barbecue. That'll be on the beach. That'll be fine. I don't think there'll be a problem there. Carnival, that's certainly, you know, some concerns, but that's not so, like, you know, 3 months away. I think certainly that can all be dealt with. I haven't heard from Heather at all. Bill, you can certainly say, did Heather say anything about the triathlon? Because, like I said, I don't speak with Heather or her venue, but I'm sure there's going to be some discussion on that, and I don't have any information on that since I don't know that never contact me in anything regarding the craft. And that's what
I think she's going to want it. Jeff?
Yeah?
Bill Taylor, I think she's going to want to know ahead of time because she has purchases to make and stuff like that. So you're going to have to work closely with her on a time frame.
Well, I would love to, Bill, just, you know, she has my email is on the board site, and if she has any different email, then maybe she could just contact me and give me what the email is. But I think they said Ed Bader is saying they're going to do some sort of liability, so I think that's also a discussion with Ed, Heather, myself, and anyone else that wants to be part of that. How can you really make it more safe? Ed, do you agree on that? Heather, you're all about the liability?
Ed Bader, the only thing that I talked to Bill's daughter about was the fact that we would purchase a one-day special events sport insurance policy, which Brian has indicated to me that we could, if we ran the triathlon, that it would cost us somewhere between $350 and $400, although we got to wait and see what how many, get some preliminary. But that's the only thing that I have talked to her about, and that we would get all of the information that we need to fill out a multi-page application insurance. Once you all, and everybody decides that we're going to run the road, and we don't have a long window of we don't need a long time. I mean, we can do it a week before. And I think one of the other things we decided, Jeff, is that we would charge that any cost of the insurance would go against our insurance budget and not against the social events budget, but at least for this year.
Okay. Could you repeat that again? Because I don't know what you just meant. What do you mean by that, Ed?
What's that? I'm sorry.
I don't know if you mean that what would be charged against social events are the insurance.
We had a discussion that you and I had a discussion that the cost of the one-day sports insurance policy, or say the triathlon, would not be charged to social events budget.
Okay.
Would be charged to the insurance budget.
Okay. And I think on the triathlon, which, like I said, I haven't heard of the logistics of it. It's always been something handled by Heather. Perhaps what we can do is have Heather either email all the board members, like everybody else emails the board members, of like what she's planning on doing. Has she thought about her event? Has she thought about how, doing what COVID is and how we do social distancing, how it could work better, how it could work? And I welcome, that to happen.
Jeff, this is Bill Taylor again. I think she has it all under control. That's not the problem. But she wants to know as soon as possible is whether it's going to be approved by the board to continue on with this stuff through the summer, because she has stuff that she buys for the carnival, stuff that she arranges with the for the triathlon. So all she's requesting is as soon as possible, because she's not going to start doing any of this unless it is a go for the OLH board. We have to give her permission to do all this. So it's not that she can't do it. It's that she's just waiting on us to say yes or no. And I know that we're not going to know until 2 months from now what's going on. But that's all. And Ed is well aware of the insurance, talking with Heather. That's not a problem either. It's just that, you have to lead this as to what you want to do with the board in allowing these events to go ahead. Thank you. I'm all set.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to say is Heather's never contacted me ever on any event of the triathlon.
Bill,
stop. I'm speaking, Bill. Please be quiet. Heather has never contacted me ever on the triathlon event of what she has to do, what she has to buy, never this close at all. And so I'm just asking for Heather, if she's already put things together and thought things through, then she needs to inform everybody on the board, just like I have to inform everybody on the board of every single event that I'm doing because of COVID. So I'm just asking, if you can't give your daughter the message
to please write to everybody on the board like everybody else has done, and I would have to send a letter to Heather or something like that. But I don't think it's an outrageous demand or request to ask her for whatever she's planning. I'm not caring about purchases. She can purchase whatever she wants. And but I think there has to be social distancing and other areas on it that just has to be spoken about, like I have spoken about for the past 3 months. And so it has to be presented to the board, so everybody on the board can ask questions. I'm not just controlling events, it's everybody on the board that looks at everything. And that's what I think is an easy request, and certainly should be done by the board.
I see, well, President, you have your hand raised. In the essence of time and personal bickering, it's getting old, guys. Can we just move on and be professional? And if you have issues to take up with each other, do it on another time. Thank you.
I'm not going to argue this bill on another time. This is ridiculous.
Good. Honestly, that's President Jeff, I want to thank you for looking at these and realizing that there are things that we won't be able to do this year in view of the pandemic. And I think that we're at, that the board is going to have to continue every time they meet to reevaluate what the state is doing, what CDC guidelines are, as are going to open over Memorial Day. And one of the recommendations of the governor is that blankets be 15 feet apart. And there are many recommendations that are going down now, and I think we're in a they are in a time things are rapidly changing, and we need to be able to react to those changes to provide as much as we can for the health and welfare of the members of our association. As part of our requirements as being board members, we really are under the subject of our charter. We are supposed to look after the health, comfort, and safety of association members. So I just want us all to think about that when we're planning our vacation, when we're doing anything that we're doing this. During this unprecedented season. And I'm going to recognize him.
Chairman, I think Bonnie, you're very correct. This is a very unusual year. Some of the events we may not be able to perform because of the requirements that the governor and the town are putting in. We need to be very flexible and be prepared to go either way. I think it's a difficult year because none of the things that we want may be possible because of the possibility that as the society begins to reopen, there may be a second wave of COVID that will spike. That's a big concern. We have no idea how many people amongst us have any immunity at all. And we also do not have any information whether if you have been exposed to the virus and you have some antibodies, whether that will provide lifelong immunity or even short-term immunity. There have been reports that people have come down with the second infection having had recovered from the first. So it's a very different year and a very different situation. Safety, as you indicate, has to be prime, and we may have to make changes accordingly.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Emma. And we move on to the next name. Or anyone who would like to speak on behalf of the
board? Bonnie, can you repeat that?
I'm sorry, I would like to move on to the WIC. Is there anyone that would like to speak on behalf of the WIC?
No. Move on.
It doesn't appear so. Okay.
It looks like it's okay enough.
I think that Corinne has indicated to the board that we have now received the date for the preliminary review, and also for the date for the leak testing. I think she put that in the email, didn't she? Bonnie put that in an email. So we're all set on the preliminary review, which is done by Amanda, and then Colin does his specific leak treatment once he gets once they analyze what they see on the visit. And also the Chick Pelton and the Wolf Post work together. They're, as you know, members of the Lake Committee, and they put together a wonderful slide presentation, blue color, that is going to be put up on the website so that all the members and boards, everyone can look at it. It's a really great thing. And we're excited about having, the LIC committee is excited about having the weed treatment done this year by before June 30th. So that should work well. That's all I have.
Okay, Bonnie Shadell, president. If no kids waving their hands that they want to get your information on LIC, I will move on to the properties committee.
Gary Peterson, board member. I think everybody knows we had a couple of trees taken down in the right-of-way between Ridgewood Road and Lookout Drive. The trees came down, they ground up the stump all in one day. So that's all taken care of for $4,000. More signs have been put up. Phil Sabo, Dave Edgington, and myself, we've been meeting every last couple of Fridays at 9 o'clock. Installing some of the street signs. We got about 5 more up. So we're going to do that every week. So if anybody wants to join us, feel free to come down and help us out. But we're going to be chipping away at it. So there's probably about 15 more signs to do. So we're getting on it. The porta potties, they've been cleaned, but they are locked up. So if we do decide in the future to open them up, they're ready to go. After last meeting, of course, we closed the basketball court, which was plywood over top of the nets there over the rims, because we couldn't really take them down without a big project. Kids' playground has been surrounded by a fenced in area, so nobody can go on there. Of course, the volleyball court, we just didn't put the net up. So. The bid for Third Beach parking lot was awarded to, the project there was awarded to John Allegra for $17,500. In that bid, he has to complete it by June 30th. So it'll be taken out of this year's budget. We only got two bids. The other bid was from Rock Landscaping for $36,000.
Wow.
So that's all I got.
Thank you, President. So go ahead, Cindy. Unmute yourself.
Cindy Biancomato, Gary. Are we going to put up a tennis net?
Yes, we are. I'll probably put that up maybe, probably this weekend. We're going to put one net up.
Yeah. And the second question I had was, on some of the street signs, are you going to put another side on them? You know, some of them...
Yes, we are. Originally they were purchased to do one side, but after we get all the signs up, we're going to go around and check them all and see what additional signs we have to add to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, President. If there are no additional questions for companies, I'll move on to public safety, which is me, and I have no charge. Kathy Sabo, do you have anything for Secretary Clark?
Kathy Sabo, nothing to report from Secretary.
Bonnie Sigal, President, I did not receive anything technology for fan nor water quality. Are there any other committees that would like to make a report?
Gary Peterson, board member. Just on the water quality, Kathy, my wife, did the water testing last year. She contacted about a month ago Russ from Chatham Health, who at that time said they would not be taking any samples to test. She is going to call him back later this week after the May 20th, the hope change there to see if it has changed at all, maybe if they're going to take the testing or not. So we'll have to let you know after.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Gary. Any other committees that would like to make reports? I'd like to move on to old business. And the first item we have on the agenda, and let me know if I'm breaking in and out here, is update. I believe that we've covered quite a bit of this social distancing wearing face masks. At the present time, I think everyone is aware that although this may change because there are some venues are going to be opening on May 20th, and we don't know by the time of July that events are going to be at the present time. That event is only 50. And I was happy to hear Jeff say that the floors are closed, and I was dance floor would block off. I mean, if people want to dance by themselves on their blanket, that's one thing. We do need to talk about, perhaps not today, but if we are still in a position where we are not able to have a June, we need to come up with some contingency plans for a drastic remote June meeting, which certainly is not desirable, but it may be something that we have to do. I would like to, Jeff, I know that your spouse is involved in the newsletter delivery, and I'd like to know what plans are for delivery for this yep. year.
What I want to say before that is on your June meeting, you probably, what may be good instead of a social distancing one, like a live one, is maybe consider having a meeting, you know, renting out a hall somewhere in Colchester, like, you know, the vet thing. But a really big room where you could actually have your residents more like 2 feet apart instead of 1 feet apart in the pavilion. That may be an idea to consider. Anyway, newsletters, you still have to, what the newsletter delivery could be that day. We're going to put an article in the paper about it, you can do it. That there's going to be no person-to-person delivery that it's strictly going to be, it's going to be dropped off at the person's house and they'll please leave a rocker. If they want to tip, they'll do a rocker, a dollar, something like that. So, you know, by no means are we going to be seeing anybody at the door. You know, we'll put the newsletters where we normally do, and, you know, people can become creative if they want to put a rock out or put their front door, their step. And that's what a lot of people have done before. Now, the actual person-to-person contact through newsletter is about maybe 10 to 15%. By the carriers. They always say they see a rock, see a note or something under the doormat in a stoop, but it really isn't much people contact, so we think that would be fine for what we're going to be doing.
Vice President, is there any other discussion on this? Now, my paper has always been delivered inside my door, and I really want somebody opening my door in. How would I think that the parents would want their children opening various people's doors to put the newspaper there?
Well, a lot of our deliveries, I can think of yours that way, but a lot of our deliveries are sometimes just under the doormat, too. You know, something in the front that way. I mean, we didn't discuss it, but maybe you want the kids to be wearing rubber gloves in doing that. Is that something you think would be amenable to solve that problem?
No, they'd have to. This is Jason. They'd have to change them with each door,
right? Okay. Okay, so then we have to say delivery has to be that they can't touch the door.
Well, Kathy Sable, I think renting a hall for the June meeting is a good idea.
This is Jason Griffin. I like the idea, but if the current limit is only 50 people in gatherings, we won't be able to rent a hall because usually about 80 or 90 people show up.
Well, that's something changed by, I don't know.
Yeah.
Cindy Biancamato, Vice President. As far as the hall goes, yes, we wouldn't probably have enough room with that limit, but wouldn't we almost be better putting the chairs 6 feet apart, as many as possible, and running them out onto the beach? You'd be in fresh air, and you still wouldn't be in contact. So I think that's doable, too.
Right, you can put chairs on the grass. I agree with that, too.
Right. Or just live streaming it somehow.
and you decide to do both. That may be, you know, why not do 6 feet apart and then make it be live streams so people want to maybe be on mute. And if they want to be to say something, we could unmute them. Somebody has to handle that.
Right. We could do a Zoom. A Zoom.
Yeah. Yes. That could really work.
Okay. Thanks again, President Knight. Thank you for your comments. I think continue to think about this and let's communicate amongst ourselves between now and our next to see what should. That's the most responsible thing for the board to do.
Kathy Sabo, board member. I just wanted to note that I did see that summer camps were opening June 29th. I know that's after our meeting, but I don't know. Just a note.
And on the board meeting, Bob, isn't there a night before, doesn't the board meet again before the town hall meeting?
I need to know, President. I think we're talking about a couple of things that we haven't. Our next board meeting is scheduled for Wednesday evening, June 17th. June OALH meeting is Sunday, June 28th. So it's about 10 days after.
Okay, thanks.
This is Jason Griffin. I suggest maybe email blast when I send out the one for the late treatments, et cetera, that we mentioned something about there may be last-minute changes to the annual meeting and how it is run, et cetera, depending on the status of regulations at that time, blah, blah, blah.
I agree with you, Jason, actually you're talking about the June meeting, not the April, although we're just to the annual meeting,
right.
Big resurgence, but I do think it's important that we, the actions that are, or the discussions that the board has had today communicated to the association so that they know that we are thinking about their health safety and that we are trying to provide summer that is safe for them while still having a nice supper down at the lake.
This is Jason. I'll try to put something together and I'll send it off to everyone before sending it out.
Is there any other discussion on the coronavirus or we talk about the right of way? Then I would like to up on the rights of way, update on the rights of way and encroachment issue.
This is Jason. I'd just like to suggest that we split this into two items and talk about them separately, one being the right of way and one being the property encroachment. I do think they are two different issues in my mind.
Kathy Sabo, agreed.
I'm sorry, how do you see it as two different issues?
Go ahead. This is Jason. I think the property encroachment update on the lake side is actual property line issue between two other property owners and ourselves. And I think that is more of a issue that really needs to be ironed out and set in stone. The rights of way issue is more of an easement and an access issue than a property line issue, although there is a property line involved. But I just kind of think one can be solved easier than the other, so they should kind of be handled separately, even though they all do tie together because it is the same property owners.
Thanks, Scott President. Gary, did you have something to say on that?
Gary Peterson, the board member. Yeah, I agree with Jason. The right-of-way only affects really the one homeowner that we've been discussing with, where the property across the street affects two homeowners. Because one homeowner, if we were to take that property back, he'd be pushing against into the other property. So, yeah, we should break it up into two different.
weeks ago, President, I feel that the owner needs to get a survey, and at this time, to my understanding, the property owner has not gotten a survey.
This is Jason Griffin. Again, I would say the property owner is getting a survey on the right-of-way. Property owner is getting a survey on the property that's across from Lake Hayward on the lakeside. I think you can be specific about where we're talking about. And they may need to do both, but I think let's handle one separately.
Yeah, this is Kathy Sabo. I think that the Byrons, who do not have a survey, we're dealing with the right-of-way and what's across the street from them on the lakefront, which in turn is affecting Mr. Wright's lakefront property, and he's the one that has a survey, right? So I think we need to separate it between the Byrons and Mr. Wright kind of type of thing, because the Byrons are the ones that are not getting the survey. Mr. Wright has the survey. He's getting his survey updated. That's what he told us last month when he was here. So I think we have to talk about that aspect of it, because we talked about, or in a document or some kind of correspondence, I think maybe Bonnie sent out, where, you know, if we have a survey and they have a survey, then we have to get a third survey to kind of, you know, say what's what. But I don't know if we have a survey of the Wright property, or if he's just being ahead of himself before his property gets pushed over. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sarah Peterson, board member.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we cannot make them get surveyed. They don't want a survey. They don't have to get surveyed. I have talked to Byron. Unfortunately, Byron, very little. We've talked face-to-face because he's still down in Carolina. One time I did talk to him, and he said if worse came to worse, then he would get a survey. And I always tried to push it, but he needs to get a survey. And our surveyor, when we met last time, told the owner, told Mr. Wright, that if they were to get a new survey, and there was a difference in survey, he'd be very happy to meet with them. And the surveyor is looking at it. It's not really, it does happen quite a bit talking to our surveyor, and they, you know, you do get these disputes, and the surveyors end up working them out instead of going to court or anything, which would be very expensive for both sides, and they don't really have to get a survey anyway if they go to court. So, you know, I think, I don't know what to do, you know, as far as pushing them to get a survey.
Yeah, Kathy Sabo, board member. Can't we get a surveyor to survey at least Mr. Wright's property, who he has a survey? And wouldn't that determine where the line was, at least on the property that is lakefront? And that would take care of that problem.
Well, in theory, again, from board members, again, we don't really... The board doesn't have a problem with Mr. Wright, unfortunately. It's really Byron that is encroaching on our property. Unfortunately, from Mr. Wright there, if our survey is correct, then his property is going to move over 10 to 15 feet onto Mr. Wright. He would have, and that would really be between that and it's not going to be us, really. We really have a problem with Byron.
And if I could say something, I know that, I mean, this is what I have here, with the way, our survey of the lakefront site is pretty clear. Nobody has disputed that. We have basically, we know that Byron has a 15-foot easement right away, a strip of property next to ours that he owns. And what that does is Gary has indicated means that actually Wright has encroached upon Byron's property and Byron has encroached on our property. So, you know, we've instructed both of them to have survey. Ira never had a survey done when we purchased the property, and Wright's survey is at least 30 years old, and then he needs to have a survey. He said he was going to get a survey, and that's fine. And Ira needs a survey. This the surveyors will do it. I'm sure there isn't a, there's not going to be a mistake in our survey. If there is a mistake in our survey, or their survey, or they still dispute it, we will eventually hire a third surveyor to arbitrate the issue. And that's really the way in which this should be handled.
Kathy Sabo, I just want to go back to what Mr. Wright said back at the last meeting where you had the meeting with the surveyors, and he said the surveyors indicated that on one pass the line seemed pretty consistent, and then on the second pass the line shifted. So doesn't that kind of say to us that there is some confusion with that area?
This is Jason. I don't think it was on pass, really. I think it was saying that if you go from one direction, the line can be one way. You go from the direction, the line can move another way. That sort of thing you talked about. But I think it really does, like Ed said, Mr. Byron needs to get the survey. That would just solve everything. It's really not up to Wright now, I think, as much as Mr. Byron.
Yeah, Kathy Sabo, I think I understand the situation now, that it's, Wright is going to have to deal with Byron, and Byron has to deal with us, and that's why he needs to get a survey. Got it.
Well, I just...
I want to recognize Ed Bader.
Thank you. I think with respect to the lakefront property, Byron understands he owns 13 feet. And I think he's happy to, although he's not told us this, Mike Gary, that just tell me where my 15 feet is, and that's where I'll park my car. And the issue is obviously when we set the boundaries up for our property, the association property, that pushes Byron northwards. And obviously that Wright loses 15 feet of his property, so he would have to go the other way. But he's got a very long, extensive piece of property that he's maintaining now. But the fact of the matter is that no one has disputed our surveyor's survey. You know, initially, Jim Ventus came out and claimed that our survey was wrong. We had the surveyors out there. We could not dispute things, and in fact, he couldn't even be involved because he's not a licensed surveyor. So, I mean, we have continuously, since September, right here, we have.
Yeah.
Encourage them, ask them to have, right, with Byron especially, to have a survey. Do the survey. If there's a difference, we'll look at it. Right? If there's a, you know, an inch or two or five inch or foot, we can probably let that pass. But for the lakefront property, we've got to basically reclaim association property for all association members. Not just permit this thing to go on and on and on.
Thank you, Bonnie. I have this and as I understand, it's your name that no one has disputed the association survey. And if Byron is the only one affected by the association survey, then we need to have him do the survey of his property. And make sure that the lines are drawn properly. If, when that happens, he has to move the opposite way and include the encroachment on the right property, that's between the two of them. That's what I'm understanding. So, if that is the case, then we need to let Mr. Byron know that if he is not disputing our survey, then that's where our line is.
I recognize Gary.
Hi, Gary Peterson, board member. Yeah, you're pretty much right. I mean, Byron, unfortunately, has been letting Mr. Wright do most of the talking for him. Really, it's his mistake.
he needs to be doing the talking, because he's the one getting, you know, somewhat affected also. He's the main player here. We have written him a letter saying that the end of May that we take that property over. And maybe he needs a little push in there to get his own three, you know.
And Bonnie Fidel, President, I hope that the board understands that we have been asking for about a year now to get his own survey, and I don't believe that we can do it until we have a survey. And if there is no further discussion on this, I think we need to move on from this.
Yeah, just Kathy Sable, just one more thing I would just want clarified. Maybe Jerry can do this for me. I just want to know the reasoning behind the whole surveying thing. Because sometimes I think the association members don't understand, as with Mr. Wright, is that, you know, this has been the line forever and ever. And I know we're saying it's our property, but what's the point besides liability? What is the point of, you know, saying it's our property and not just leaving usage as it is?
We have a lot of properties. We're trying to survey all our properties over a time. And we've had a couple problems before. We've taken care of them. And there's going to be more problems ahead. You know, we got to spend Christmas as to, keep our property for all the members of the association.
And in fairness, you can't treat one differently than another.
Yep, that's a good point.
Ed Baker?
Ed Baker. Kathy, there's also one other issue that people tend to forget. We are a municipal tax district. We have all the powers of the municipality. When it comes to property disputes, unlike if you and I had a property dispute and you encroached on my property for a long period of time, the courts have ruled that most personal property, the person's property is property, you as the encroacher gain the rights to the property. That rule does not apply for municipalities and the municipal tax system. If someone encroaches on our property, they gain no rights whatsoever. The courts are very clear that we continue to own those properties in perpetuity, and as a practical matter, 3 or 4 years, whenever we started this project about 4 years ago, we decided that all of the properties would be surveyed, because we did find that people, property owners, would impress the location on association property, putting fence up, barricading rights of way, doing all kinds of other things to limit access and take over association properties. So we decided, whatever it was, 4 years ago, to finally stumble voice out. We have all of the property surveyed, and that we're only trying, as Gary points out, we're trying to treat everybody equally. You know, when people buy property, they should obviously have a survey done at the point of purchase of the property. Any properties within the association are denied. A buyer's own get survey. That's on that. In this particular case, we are just trying to maintain what was originally in the way the association was developed, the properties that we own, and the rights of way that are public rights of way that need to be established and barricaded.
Kathy Sable, so if Mr. Byron loses his property because it's association property, he'll still be able to use it as an association member?
Oh, yes, of course.
He can still park his car there and do whatever he wants to it.
Well, we don't know about that. No, I think the parking of the car, he would have on his 15-foot, there's not a additional association, and we're not making, unless the board wants to make that whole area a parking lot, it's up to the board to make it a parking lot. We're trying to maintain the not turning lakefront properties into parking lots. Legal. So Byron has parking behind his house on Pilgrim Way. He's got access to that, I believe. Hi, Carrie?
Yes, he does.
He has parking there, and he has a 15-foot strip in which he can get at least one car and probably two cars there. I think if he needs to park in his on his lakefront property. So I don't think we're losing. And then the only thing we're going to have to do is move his mailbox and move his fence in, or whatever it was, 2 or 3 or 4 feet in, to reclaim the right-of-way.
Jason Griffin, in regards to the right-of-way issue only, I feel as long as there is, we don't, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, we don't own the right-of-way. It is an easement on the property owners that have the right-of-way. I feel as long as they're not encroaching easy access, they can make it down from Ridgewood to Lake Hayward, their drive, that we don't ask for any changes with that right-of-way issue on the non-lake bypass. That everyone can get up and down there fine. It's their property. They mow it. It's well-maintained. I have no issue with the right-of-way. That's why I think that should be a separate section. I don't know if maybe we can close out that issue and talk about that issue because it seems like an easy solve, perhaps, and then leave the other side as the other to which needs more legal clarification.
I really don't think that the board should make any decision until Byron gets a survey.
Right.
Kathy Sable, but what's the alternative then, Byron, if he doesn't get a survey?
The survey doesn't affect the right-of-way.
Right.
The survey doesn't affect the right-of-way. It only affects the lake side.
Kathy Sable, I agree with Jason. I think the right-of-way should be left, I mean, as it is. Whether it's his property or our property, doesn't really matter.
Well, Mr. Dale, President, I think we're setting a very dangerous precedent if we don't claim our right-of-way.
Giving us the right-of-way on their property, this is Jason. On the opposite of the lake.
Please unmute yourself.
So my question is, obviously you all know that I was the shed issue, and if we're going to allow the right-of-way people to keep it the way it is, although that's what I think we should do, then why did I have to move my shed?
Cindy, in defense, I agree. Right-of-way, we don't own the right-of-way. Whereas when it came to Third Beach parking lot, we own Third Beach parking lot. And that's what I'm saying. A lakeside issue, yes, we have to follow through and get surveys, all that sort of stuff. But the right-of-way, we don't own. The two property owners own the right-of-way. We just have easement to let us walk up and down it. They can set up a blockade so no one can walk from Richmond to whatever. And they have it. It's maintained it. It's wide open. Everyone can go up and down. That's why I say it's super pernicious.
But if that is the case, why can't the two property owners get a joint survey done and recall that issue? But the feeling is, it's not the issue that is the right of way. If they are concerned about having people be able to use, then the two property owners will need to get a survey with the rights and the violence and decide where the property lines are. In that big dispute, as to where the property lines are.
Gary Peterson, board member. I would like to see somebody from the board here, probably the president, call up Byron personally talk to him, because we've had very, very little communication with him and Steve, and tell him, you know, the May 30th deadline is coming up when we were going to take over the property, and what's his latest decision on getting a survey, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, we can't just let it go and just keep going and going and going. We gotta push him a little bit to try to get him to get a survey. And,
thank you, Mr. President. I would certainly be willing to contact Mr. Byron, and I would suggest that we table further discussion on this entire issue until we get some definitive words from Mr. Byron.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that.
I'm still President. Everybody happy with that? I'll contact Mr. Byron and report back to the board at the next association meeting, if not the next board meeting, if not sooner.
Jason, yes.
Kathy, yes.
I see lots of things.
Yes.
I see people nodding their heads. Okay. Very good.
Yes.
Thank you. Vice Chair President again, I want to, I do have a plan update. The agenda for today. It's table that so that we can go on to certain matters.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
We're losing you, Bonnie.
We do have a next item on our agenda, the strategic plan update. As it is 11 o'clock already, I could entertain a motion to table that for a board meeting.
Bonnie, can I just make one comment? I have circulated the little write-up that I sent out to the committee members of the strategic plan committee. I would like input from all of the other board members as far as they can, and if you can just communicate with one thing, they can table it for now, but I'd like to continue to work on it and try to come up with a workable plan, because what we had in the past was a list of items that sort of was everywhere, and I'm sometimes look at it as but the mix is late, because that's what we all there in that area for. What affects our properties that we are responsible for, and what affects the other programs that we run, such as the recreational programs. So we're trying to determine how we can make this a little bit more tangible. I hope I'm able to myself clear on that.
You're very clear again. I think an important part of the strategic plan update is some approximate dollar amounts to do what we want to do in a timetable so that we can develop reserves in order to accomplish what we want to do. I do want to invite members. I did send out a copy of the strategic plan as so far to the board members. If anybody needs another copy, let me know, and I'll send it out again. But direct your comments to Hema so that he can get together with his committee to further develop the plan. Agreed?
That'd be fine. Okay. Agreed.
Glad
to do that.
Would be the blighted properties. Has there been any movement on blighted properties? Say no. Okay. We have an update on the bio detention.
He just left, so hopefully he's coming back in a minute. There he comes. Right?
Okay, very quickly. For Bader, on the bio detention and the dam inspection, the engineers and the wetland consultant and the surveyors have been working on the biodetention of eight to get the plan and ready for review by the board at the next June meeting. With respect to the dam inspection, Carl Asimovic, who is our engineer, should be ready with a preliminary draft of his report on the recommendations as to what should be done for the dam. I had sent a memo, and Cindy asked me a question about the town and whether or not they funded our request for two projects. The town did not put that in the budget. I don't know why we didn't know that earlier, but we did, so I called and got a copy of the approved budget. He had asked the town for to fund 50% of the dam reconstruction and 50% of the biodetention basin that was effectively 50% of 50,000, the preliminary estimate we had, and 20% of the 25,000. The Board of Finance, I think, of the town of East Adams is dealing with a lot of issues. My recommendation is that we continue to move ahead. We can hear what the engineer has to say about the cost elements and the proposal process. Remember, this is both of these projects are long-term. The biodetention basin is subject to weapons approval by the town of East Adams, so that one could go quicker. The other one has to be filed with the DEEP, Department of Environmental and Energy Protection. That one could take anywhere from 4 to 6 months or longer to get approval. I did point out we have enough in the capital reserves to cover both of these projects, and I think with more specific plans, we will reapply in December for the next year's town reimbursement. And the town has been pretty good, even though they gave us reimbursed us 15,000 on the Third Beach dredging, which will put the capital reserve back up at about 90,000, or a little bit more than that. And so I think we should just continue to do both, move ahead on both of these projects. But you can later, I think, make a decision at the June meeting when you see the details of the reports. Questions?
And I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chamber, but Lee and I have to leave. We have something come up and we have to go, so we'll be heading out.
For okay.
Okay.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. President. If there are no questions, the last item under old business was signage enforcement. Thank you, Mr. President. Cindy, you unmuted yourself, right?
Cindy Biancamano. Can we make a motion to grandfather in the Cold Spring Farm sign with her also making some improvements to the surrounding area?
I second that motion. I think that's great.
By the discussion, all I want to say is that under the rules and regulations which were adopted in June of 2014, it does say that all signs are prohibited except those having to do with public safety, convenience, and the renting or selling of property. And that is the way that our rules and regulations are right now. And the only signs that are grandfathered, to my knowledge, would be the ones that are realtors. Doesn't mean we can't change them, but that is the way that it's regulated right now.
Cindy Biancamano, Vice President.
What if she adds to the sign, for your safety, please walk up this hill carefully?
I love you.
Gary?
Gary.
Oh, okay. Gary Peterson. Yeah, I mean, they've been a good neighbor. I guess if they've had that sign up there a long time, they can kind of be grandfathered in. I think it should be a better and a new sign and have to be approved. They can make some design of a sign, and we have to approve it, and also maybe, you know, plant some flowers around it, a nice little sign, not just some sign you stick in there. And I might be a foil down for it.
Kathy? Kathy Sable, board member. I definitely think that this is an issue that came up earlier in a board meeting. I forget, last year, September, October, whatever, when we had a very healthy discussion about the signs around the lake. And I know Ed Bader was trying to enforce the signage rules and telling people to take down signs. And we had a conversation of what's good for one is good for the other. I don't think... Me personally, as a board member, I don't think it's a big deal about signs, but I think right now, because Jan is supposed to be working on new wording to change the bylaws about signs. So right now, I think we should let everyone just keep their signs in place until we put in the new wording for the bylaws, which will hopefully include something that says each case can be taken individually on a case-by-case board, you know, by the board, which in turn then we would individually take on the case of Cold Spring Farm, and of course we would all approve it because we have no problem with that sign there, with maybe some updates and improvements. But for now, I think we should just leave it as it is until we change the rules on the bylaws. That's what I think. And let her keep her sign up until we actually can get that done.
Bye, Mr. President. Actually, it's actually in the situation, Kathy, not the bylaws, not that matters a whole lot. I would like to recognize and Jeffrey Conway.
I went at the farm yesterday, and actually about some other matters, and Jessica did bring up about Ed Bader talking to her about the sign, and that's why I suggested for her to call in. And we just talked about it. I asked her, like, you know, how long has it been? She had been alone for a very long time. Well, she suggested, she said, if the board wanted me, and that's why she said those things, she said the board wants me to, you know, create a sign and dress the area up. I could even give them drawings, but she said if you make a nice wooden sign, that would be nice and amenable instead of, like, you know, what a metal sign is. It's something that's going to stand up. So he was on board of getting a wooden sign and making it look nice. And then, of course, you know, maintain the areas and make with flowers or something like that. But I think, like I said, I had asked you before if I could, you know, tell her whatever your decision is. I think we can certainly say, you know, can you come up with a drawing of what your sign could be, and then that could be reviewed by the board sometime in the future.
Thanks, Mr. President. I am in favor of tabling this issue until Jan comes up with new regulations regarding signs. But I do want to recognize it.
Ken Bader, the sign guy. Originally, when I called, just to clarify, originally when I talked to Jesse way back in October, she explained her situation, and I said that she should come before the board meeting, and that over a period of a couple of board meetings, she said she would come or she would write a letter, and she didn't do that, so she finally obviously showed up. Procedurally, these are rules and regulations of the association. They effectively are ordinances of the association. In order to change the board has responsibility for changing those rules. There are certain things that if you're going to change the rules, make an exception, I think you need, under ordinances kind of rules, you need to give notice in the agenda at a future meeting that you are considering making a change in the rules of the signage rules. You then give people an opportunity to weigh in, plus some for and against whatever you're proposing. And in this particular case, just using this as an example, you're going to propose that Cold Springs be given an exception to the rule in order to put a sign up. Okay. Hearing the pros and cons of that, then the board goes through and votes on it. In order to change the rules and regulations, you need a two-thirds vote. So you need 6 out of the 9 board members to approve that change. Okay? So that would be the procedure that you would have to employ. Now, as far as the sign is concerned, with Cold Springs, once she said she wanted to come, that sign has not been touched. The sign has been left right there, and nothing has been done to the sign. So she's had the sign. Okay? So I just wanted to clarify that for purposes of making a doing the right thing, following the rules and procedures.
Yes, that is under Article 9 of our bylaws, ordinance, regulations, how we could make changes to our regulations. So I would like to see this actually put the sign in place, table this until Ann makes a proposal for a change in this regulation.
Kathy Sabre, board member, yeah, I agree that we should just table this until we change the rules on the sign and leave, let Jessica have her sign there. You know, just leave it there and tell her that we're changing, you know, the rules, and after the rules are changed, she will continue to be able to have her sign there.
Vice President Jeffries?
So whenever the vote is made, like I said, no one said it. No, whenever you come, I agree with what Kathy just said, and yes, taking it's fine, that's all fine. So when you come and make the motion, we accept that. Like I said, I'd be happy to just tell Jeff, so we're, you can leave it as is, we're doing, you know, whatever your decision is in the motion. Because no one said, yes, Jeff, you can do this. So once the motion's made, I vow to do this, I have to tell them anyway.
Kathy Sabo, do we need a motion? Can't we just say we're just tabling this and just tell her that we're tabling it and she can leave her sign there, even if it's until next year, so we can get the changes set and do it in a more formal manner to allow her sign to be there, and then she can go ahead and make improvements on the sign like that. Right?
Right.
Jerry?
Yeah, that's pretty much, Jerry, pretty much, I just want to tell her that, because we really haven't voted on letting her keep her sign there. We'll let her keep her sign there until we make a new rule. And if the new rule, you know, allows her to continue, it's fine. You know, but we haven't voted on that part yet.
No.
Let's consider this and move on. We do have some items of new business that we really do need to get. We made a promise to ourselves, the board members, within the last half a dozen years that they would not go over 3 hours. And anything that's accomplished within 3 hours would be tabled automatically for the next meeting. But I think we can get through this new business in a relatively quick period of time. The next item of new business is to waive the competitive bidding for New England Reserve testing. This is a LIC matter, I think the only person on the LIC is Ed Bader, so perhaps you could just give us a little teeny bit of background on this.
Well, yes. Quote was for more than $5,000. This is a contractor that we've utilized in the last 3 or 4 years. And so the committee felt that we should continue with the existing contractor and ask the board to waive the competitive competitive bidding rules for Leland reserve testing. It's an $8,000 contract spread over about 7 months from May until October, I think. Something around $7,000 a month or something like that. $800 a month, something like that.
I need to go, President. Do I hear a motion to waive the competitive bidding for New England reserve testing?
I'll make a motion to waive that.
I'll second it.
That was
great. Okay, yes,
there you
go. There you go. Is there any? Bonnie Fidel, this motion was made by Jeffrey Conway and seconded by Gary Peterson. Is there any discussion?
Kathy Sable, board member. I don't see what the problem is with getting another bid. I think that's why the rules are in place. So, I don't agree with this motion.
I need to know, President, is there any other discussion? Okay, if there's no other discussion, I would ask Kathy, please, to take a vote, please.
Kathy Sabo taking the vote on the motion presented on waiving the bid or whatever the motion was. I don't know. I'm getting tired. There you go. Cindy Biancamano? You got it. You're muted, Cindy.
Cindy Biancamano, yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Gander Pratt is absent. Hima De Silva? Hima? Voting? Hima? Emma?
He's doing something else.
Yep.
I'll text him.
We'll continue the roll call with the other people.
Jason Griffin is now absent. Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Sabo, no. Bonnie Sedell?
Yes.
Bill Taylor?
Yes.
Hema Silva? Hema? I don't know what to say. All right, we're waiting.
He's staying. Not responding.
Bonnie's calling him.
Yeah, can you come out and vote?
We can't hear you, Hema.
Your audio. His audio is totally lost. Can he say it through my phone if I put it on speaker?
This is Jason. I got on the phone. This is Jason Griffin. We are on the phone. I am voting yes.
Oh, okay, great, Jason. Thank you.
Hema, what are you voting?
What are you voting on? I have no idea what I'm
voting. We're waiving the competitive bidding for the New England reserve testing.
I will go along with the story before. I will write that it's very busy.
He would like to say no?
Yes.
He's voting no.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was a no from Hema De Silva. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 yeses. So that means the motion carries, right? 2 no's, 2 absent. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, we have 6 yeses. We have 6 yeses. 6 yeses. So the motion carries.
We've got a tremendous amount of interference from somebody.
Was it me?
Kathy, I believe that you said there were 6 yeses and 2 no's, so the motion carried to waive the competitive bidding for New England reserve testing.
Yes.
That is correct.
The next item on the agenda is to set the mill rate, and I will refer to our tax collector and budget chair, Ed Peter.
Hey, Ed Bader, tax collector. I sent you on Thursday the calculation of the July 1st, 2020 mill rate. The mill rate will go down to 4.115 mills. That compares with 4.3424 mills last year. The decrease is principally due to the fact that under our existing rules, if we don't spend the money from 2 years back, we added to the and use it to reduce the mill rate. So that's for what the majority of the decline in the mill rate is due to the late weed treatment cost of $10,185 that was not spent during fiscal year ended June 30th, 2019. Right? So the mill rate will be declining to 4.115 mills, which will raise the required property tax is $5,915. Okay. Any questions?
Hey, President, I would like to ask for a motion to set the rate at 4.115 mills for July
20 points. Okay, Gary
Pearson,
I'll make that motion.
All right, a sec. Cindy, I see you raise your hand. Cindy.
Your mute is off. Who is that?
Sorry, I'll second it.
Okay, so we'll take the vote on accepting the mill rate.
Is there any discussion? There being no discussion, Kathy, would you please take the vote?
Cynthia Camano?
Yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Dan DePratty is absent. Hema De Silva?
Yes.
Jason Griffin?
Jason Griffin, yes.
Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Sabo votes yes. Bonnie Sedell?
Bonnie Sedell, yes.
Bill Taylor?
Yes.
Motion is carried unanimously.
Bonnie Sedell, thank you. The last item that I have under new business has to do with the insurance requirements for the civilian rental, which may or may not be an issue this year with COVID, although I don't believe we've turned away any reservations. I'd like to ask Ed for a little because we have not had insurance requirements on for rental of the in the past.
No, I think Ed Bader. I think the only thing that the board objected to was requiring the property owners to provide a copy of their insurance policy. But we will not require that. They still are bound by the indemnification agreement that they signed. That any claim as a result of an activity at the pavilion or any related activity that can be traced back to the pavilion's rental will be covered under their own insurance policy. So so we are not requiring the thing, and I think we're website and the form had been changed, but if it hasn't, I will work with Jason to get it changed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So this is a moot point. Is everyone in agreement, as long as we take off the requirement if it has not already been taken off it.
What kind of returns are we requiring, even though they're not going to show us their returns? Do we have a limit of how much is supposed to be insurance?
Well, they will be signing the affidavit that they have that level of insurance. We're just not looking to get an insurance certificate or a copy of their declaration page to prove it. So when they rent, they're telling us it has to be a property owner. We already made that, and they have to have insurance. We're just not getting the evidence of that in our hands, right? Unlike most other homeowner associations, most other entities that rent ask for an accord form that states the terms of the coverage. So here the board is taking making a definitive change to not requiring the accord form and not requiring a copy of the policy. So that issue and that risk is being borne by the board of governors.
Kathy Sabo, board member, but we're not requiring them to have a certain. There's not a set limit amount in there. We're not requiring them to have 300 or 500. I know you say that's common, but maybe some people don't. So we just want to make sure that it's open to everyone for rental, not just only those who have limits. Policy limits.
Sure. I have to go back and look at the forms that Kathy to see what it specifically said. But I think I'll go back, but in the attestation, we will ask them to have a minimum of $300,000 or $500,000, and if they only have $300,000, that they have an umbrella. They have to attest to us that they have insurance.
Right.
Kathy
Sabo, because I think that was the discussion last time, and that was part of the problem, was that we were saying then you have to have this much. And I get what you're saying, that it's a very common number, you know, the 300 to 500, whatever. But maybe not everyone has that. They have insurance, but maybe not that much insurance. So I don't agree with putting those amounts in there.
What amount would you like to put in there?
Does it have to be an amount? I mean, if you have homeowners insurance, you have homeowners insurance. Whatever their amount is what it is.
I disagree. I just need a minimum amount. They need something there that they're going to have something. I mean, you know, if $300,000 is nothing now, if something happens. I think it's more than that.
I'm going to recognize Ed Bader.
We require all the people that operate and work and have down there, all of our contractors, everyone has minimum insurance. We actually ask them for more coverage than we're asking for the homeowners. I think we should state a minimum amount of insurance, liability insurance, because the problem that we have is we have somebody let's assume that they have a cottage and they're a property owner and they have no liability insurance on their primary or their cottage, right? There's nothing there for us to look to collateralize or to support the payment of a claim. We need to have certain minimums within the commercial risk management system. This is what the brokers are telling you. We need to have a minimum. The minimum that we selected was the amount that is generally used by most homeowner associations when renting to property owners. And that's all I did. I didn't try to exclude anybody. But if the board wants to reduce it to some amount, lesser amount, that's fine. Our only position was that we require evidence of coverage from almost everybody else we deal with. and anybody who's running a private event at the pavilion should also provide a proof of insurance. Now, if the board doesn't want to do that, the board's private. I'm only here to advise you from a risk management standpoint of what is common practice.
Go ahead, Jeff. Talk.
I'm sorry. I think the comparison of a general contractor to a homeowner is not appropriate for what we're talking about. I think someone having homeowner's insurance should have enough, you know, coverage for it if they have an event going on. I think a general contractor has to have huge insurance to do between general contracting work. So I think that example is poor. And I think we should go with Kathy saying they can have their homeowner's insurance, and that should cover whatever, you know, their event may be for coverage to the board. And it's still important for you to have liability insurance. Please tell us what your debt confirmed, and you have liability insurance on your homeowner's for the event. That's the issue. Yeah.
Jeff?
Invader, we're not asking the commercial contractors that we work with and utilize. We ask a lot more coverage. The amounts are much higher. So I wasn't trying to compare them. Other than that, we should get some evidence of insurance from property owners who rent the pavilion. Now, the board has to decide. There should be a basic limit amount that you want them to attest to. Now, if you don't want them to provide the form, it's up to the board. And the board's taking on more risk if there is a situation claim and they don't have the insurance, then that's the board's responsibility. I just think that it was following the practice of most of the homeowner associations and people and entities that rent to private citizens their common facilities to provide insurance. Provide evidence of insurance. But it's the board's decision as to the minimum amount they should have, and then secondly, whether they should provide an accord form or a copy of their debt page to demonstrate that they had insurance. But frankly, if the people don't have insurance, we shouldn't rent to them.
Kathy Sabo, Ed, I think you're missing the point. I'm not saying we should rent to anyone that doesn't have insurance. And certainly you can include wordage in the agreement or the lease or whatever you're proposing to change that requires them to have insurance. Okay? But what I'm saying is I don't think there should be amount as to what their limits are. Now, that should be not a problem because from what you're saying in your own words, most people have 300, 500, whatever. So it shouldn't be a problem to not put in any wording as to the amount of the limit that the insurance is, but that they do indeed hold insurance.
Well, I have a hand raised.
That is reasonable
Again, I think we need to set a minimum amount, whether it's $100,000, I think it's very, very low, or $300,000, $500,000, $1 million. I think we need a minimum, something that is a minimum, if they're going to rent the building.
Andy Cadell, President, and I think what Ed said very early in this discussion was we them to sign that they have it. If I heard Ed correctly, he said that we were not going to require them to provide proof of insurance. So if they lie to us, they're lying to us. But at least he has said that we want to have a certain amount of insurance for them to rent the property.
Kathy Sable, board member, I understand that. I don't agree with it. So, that's my thoughts.
Okay, Bonnie Segal, president, if everybody has had a chance to say what they, how they feel about it, the insurance on the pavilion rental form, Kathy, do you hear something in the form of a motion that has been made or not to your, in your notes?
No, because it was hard for me to come up with something I don't agree with, Tony. So someone else is going to have to make the motion. You're asking me to look at my notes. All I know is that we want to put in the verbiage in the rental agreement that they have to have insurance in the amount of limits of at least $300,000. That's what I'm hearing.
Michael President, you're really broken up there. Ed, what did the city say?
The
$300,000.
It said if you only had $300,000, you needed an umbrella. I think of $500,000 on top of that. If you had $500,000, you didn't need an umbrella. Maybe that's what people are confused about. That's what we had. We had it in the language, and also we then said you have to have that minimal amount of coverage. Either way, $300,000 was an umbrella, or $500,000 for occurrence. And we asked the renters to provide us with a copy of their deck page, the declaration page, or the accord form that basically shows the limits of their homeowner's policy. So that's what we asked them. Then it was pushed back that there would be people who didn't want to show us their insurance policy, or they didn't have insurance. So that's why the subject could come back on to the thing. And what I had heard at the last meeting is you were okay with the limit that we put in, but you were not requiring the policyholder, the property owner, to provide evidence of their coverage. So we were basically telling them that they did not have, ultimately would tell them they did not have to provide copies of their deck page or in the court showing their coverage. And that was hopefully in the works and would be resolved. But I don't think, and we haven't asked for the evidence yet, because I think we've got three or four rentals on the books now, but we haven't asked for the insurance policy yet. And then when we finally resolve this, if you decide you don't want to eliminate the evidence of providing the coverage, or you want to reduce the insurance limit, we can adjust the form accordingly.
So can we make a motion, Cindy Campanaro? Yep. So I make a motion that
we eliminate our request for documentation and we ask for minimal $300,000 of homeowners insurance in order to rent our pavilion.
I like that. I second the motion. That's very fair.
Bonnie Shell, President, we're up for just now. Possibly she would amend it to say $300,000 with an umbrella of 500 or 500 no umbrella.
That's not what my motion was, no.
I think the $300,000 is fine because if you, when you have a home, I mean, $300,000 is really a huge amount of money. And again, I can't see somebody die at a rental, a private rental of the pavilion. If they had a heart attack, it wouldn't be the pavilion's fault if they had a heart attack. The pavilion would have to collapse on them for them to make any sort of, claim for $300,000. So I think you're fine at $300,000.
Gary Peterson?
$300,000 is a start, that's for sure. I mean, the thing we get in trouble with is if all of a sudden they're all drinking there, somebody gets in a car and they go down the street and kill somebody, then we have a liability to pay for it. And that's why I think we want an umbrella policy at the beginning, something like that.
Mr. Jason, sorry, I can't see you, so I'm breaking, I'm kind of cutting in without being noticed. Regardless of all this, I'm just against asking for the insurance at all. I feel people can go down to the pavilion without renting it and do just as much damage as if they rent it.
President, I think there's a big difference, though, Jason, that people that just go down to the pavilion on their own versus someone who signs the contract and put a deposit down on it. I think that's where the difference is, and the better we ask them to provide the insurance, I think that we need to make people aware that we do require insurance. Now, if they lie to us, then that's another mess, but I think we need to have some evidence of insurance.
I think my motion stated that, right?
President Kathy, I think Cindy Biancomano's was that they had $300,000
minimum. Yep, documentation. Eliminate the request for the document and ask for $300,000 minimum liability.
If there's no Bonnie Sudell, President, if there's no further discussion on this motion, I would ask that Kathy.
Okay, taking the vote, Cindy Biancomano?
Yes.
Jeff Conway?
Yes.
Dan DePratty is absent. Hema?
Yes.
Jason Griffin?
No.
Yes.
Jason Griffin? Was that a yes?
Yes.
Yes. Gary Peterson?
Yes.
Kathy Stable votes no. Bonnie Sedell?
No.
Bill Taylor?
No.
5-3.
Yep. Motion carries with 5 yeses.
The form will be changed to reflect that, and as previously stated by Cindy, there will be no requirements for evidence of it. Are there any other items of new business before we adjourn this meeting?
Yep, Jeffrey. Really easy thing. I had some people from Second Beach come to me asking if we could get, or concerned to get more boat racks because, the boat racks always fill up in Second Beach. I can't remember if there's room for that, but they wanted that to be considered at the next board meeting. And then the next thing is, if anybody ever sees what's hell, gallon jugs of hand sanitizer, I've been looking at them. I'm just pointing out to everybody on the board, if you see gallons of that, 5-4 gallons of something, those are really big size, because we should really have hand sanitizer at the pavilion for the whole summer for any events or anything, and I can't find it. So anybody find it, please buy it, I'll reimburse you through my advantage department.
Gary Peterson, board member. Jeff, on the boat rack, well, it's not really, the board doesn't have to make a decision. I can make more. But right now, the Second Beach is not filled up. The boat rack is not filled up. So right now, we really don't need any more. But, there is room to make more, but so far, we don't really need more.
Okay.
Is there any, Bonnie Tudel, President, is there any other new business? I want to thank everyone for participating in the meeting this morning, and as I see from my window, the sun is shining, it looks beautiful out.